mentioned there was this report about you having trouble with your owner or having trouble that was... Now, Mike Lombardi is known to spread a lot of nonsense and also to have an agenda sometimes.
It's Cofield and Company.
But anything going on that we need to know about?
No. I think we're you know, we had a long spring and we're very excited about our free agents. We had worked very well with Adam through this whole process and, excited about working with him going forward.
Oh, the New York Jets. We love them. I'm actually a fan. Mike Maccagnan on with my guy, Francesa. Right? Maccagnan, no problems. I'm good. That was April 29th. May 15th, he's fired. What's the deal with taking shots at Michael Lombardi? I don't like that. You know what? Let's talk to Michael Lombardi. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I appreciate being here. I mean, look, you can't get any more wrong than Mike Francesa. I mean, if Mush from the Bronx Tale was never right, then I think Big Mike, he can make sure that Mush looks like the winner.
What was going on there? Why is he taking shots at you?
I have no idea, but I think he just is, I have no idea why he would want to do that. I don't spread rumors. I don't say things, I'm not trying to become the next Adam Schefter. I have a different style that I utilize and I believe in, and so... for Francesa, who thinks he has all the answers, as I said on my Twitter feed, he's a genius with an eraser, so he can keep doing it.
We all are. That's a sad part about radio, guys. I can make a lot of predictions. What? I didn't say that. So you were onto this a couple of weeks ago. What were you hearing about the Jets and Maccagnan and Adam Gase?
Well, no, I think it goes back further than that. I think you got to really understand that Mike was there, and with Brian Heimerdinger, they've had 4 years there. And part of that team, when you break down any team, whether it be in college or pro, you're like a veterinarian. You have to analyze the team in three phases: players, coaches, and scheme. And when you looked at the Jets last year in 2018, their roster was not very good. Their schemes were not very good, and their coaching, in all honesty, and even Todd Bowles would say this, was not very good. And for them to fire Bowles and say it's all coaching and come back and say the players aren't that bad really, to me, was disconcerting. And I think if everybody in the NFL knew, when that job opened up, everybody in the NFL knew that the general manager and the vice president of player personnel were going to have to be somebody you worked around, because their building of the roster wasn't very good. And therefore, it was going to be a problem. When they tried to hire Matt Rhule from the University of Baylor, Matt Rhule wanted to bring coaches with him. Heimerdinger and Maccagnan both said no, that you can't bring those guys. And he walked away knowing that he walked away from a good situation, because he wasn't going to go in and have somebody pick his coaches that weren't good at picking players.
Right. So how did Maccagnan then survive? He's part of the Gase hiring. He spends all this money in free agency, and he runs the draft. How did that happen?
Well, I think a lot of times these owners that they come in, you never see the stripes where the general looks out in the courtyard. He said, "Are those my men?" And he's not really sure about what's going on with his company. Well, that's kind of like a lot of owners in the NFL. They don't know what's going on in their company. They don't know what's going on in their organization. They think everything's fine. And I think what happened was, he finally, the deeper into it he got, that he realized that there was dysfunction. Look, the way the NFL works today, you've got to have two people joined at the hip. The general manager needs to be in the background. He needs to be working in terms of building the roster and adhering to the culture and the philosophy that the coach has set forth and the organization believes in. And that's his job. It isn't you work for me, I'm the GM, you work for me, and you coach these players I bring you. That's old school. That doesn't work anymore. That's just never going to get it done. And that's one of the reasons why Bill Walsh said in 1984, we're only competing against 8 teams of the 28, because he knew that most teams had the wrong philosophical structure within their organization, and that hasn't changed. So I think what Christopher Johnson kind of actually saw and listened to what Gase was telling him, look, I want to build a culture, and you guys are signing a guy and giving him all this money, and he doesn't even want to show up to help me build a culture, that's a problem.
So you're not buying this narrative that has been thrown out there by a lot of people. We're talking to Michael Lombardi that, Adam Gase is some power-hungry, putz who's out of control.
No. Adam Gase is a guy who wants to win. Adam Gase is a guy who wants to build a culture. Anybody who took the Jet job was going to have to cross this bridge. It was going to be a problem. Look, the Jets roster is bad. They've won 28 games in the last 5 years. The Patriots have won 74. That's almost lapping the field three times. I'm not great at math, but it's almost three times. And so you're so far out of the race that you're not even in competition to get to the lead. There's a reason why. The talent level. Look, they just traded Darren Lee, one of Mike's picks. It was a high-level pick. They traded him for a six-round pick. They draft Jamal Adams. I wrote about this in my book. I think Jamal Adams is a wonderful football player. I think Jamal Adams is a tough guy. I love everything about Jamal Adams. The problem is the NFL game doesn't allow you to play guys that play in the middle of the field that dominate the game. Ronnie Lott would struggle to play today. Ronnie Lott's dominance and intimidation inside the middle of the field, which made the 49ers so successful, would not be tolerated based on player safety today. So when you use the sixth pick overall in the draft for a position that's essentially dying in the NFL, and it's going to become more of a corner position, you've got to ask yourself, are you paying attention to the NFL and what's actually going on?
Along those same lines, the oversimplified version of what went wrong with the Jets is the disagreement over investing heavily in a running back like Le'Veon Bell. Where do you stand on investing a lot of money in a running back in this day and age?
I don't think you do it. I mean, look, it's really not that complicated. I mean, you don't have to be Warren Buffett to figure out the valuation and the value that you can get. There's the supply and demand. You can draft a running back in the fifth round like the Packers did with Aaron Jones, or you could draft somebody later in the day, you know, Alvin Kamara in the third round. Mike had an opportunity to draft Alvin Kamara. John Morton, the offensive coordinator of the Jets at the time, was screaming to draft Alvin Kamara. He wouldn't take him. They took another receiver in that draft. He's now been cut. So there's plenty of opportunities. The thing that's fascinating about the Jets is nobody is giving the Jets front office, the law firm of McKagan and Heimendinger, any crap about the fact that they passed Patrick Mahomes. They passed Deshaun Watson in the draft. They didn't give those guys any time of day whatsoever, and then they had to use all these assets to trade for Sam Darnold. If they would have picked Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, they would have kept their jobs and moved on.
Must Listen podcast with Michael Lombardi and Adnan Virk, the GM Shuffle. It's up there with yesterday's Jets base podcast. Who are the Jets going to get to run the organization? Who are the names?
I don't know. I think, you know, obviously I've read the Joe Douglas. I think it's going to be somebody that, you know, this whole narrative that's got to be somebody that Gase wants. No, it's got to be somebody that Gase philosophically understands and gets along with. Walsh said the Civil War is the ugliest war to fight in organizations, and it's still true. You want somebody, not that you want somebody who's going to agree with you every time, but philosophically. Belichick and I worked together for more than 10 years, if you add the two times we were together. And philosophically, we were always on the same page. We could disagree about a player, whether he fit the philosophy or not, but philosophically, there was no debate. Does that mean I was a yes man to Bill or Bill was a yes man? No, of course not. We're both guys that want to win. And we want to create a culture that adheres to listening to people give their opinion. But philosophically, we're going to be aligned. And I think that's what the Jets have to do, is find somebody philosophically. Look, the reason they have not won is because they have refused to build a culture. They think signing Le'Veon Bell and giving out all this money is going to win for them. When we all know, and when we study history and we study championships team, we know that champions are built through everybody working together. The U.S. hockey team won in 1980, not because they were the most talented team. They were just the best team.
Scott Pioli stepped away from the Falcons today. Could he be one of the guys?
I don't think so. I think if Scott was going to be one of the guys, he would have stayed in Atlanta and just waited. I think the reason he left is to pursue other options. I don't see that one. Now, you know, it could be, but I think it would be find it hard based on my understanding of how the NFL operates. You'd never leave a job if you're up for another one.
What do you think when you see a rumor like Daniel Jeremiah leaving the NFL Network to go work with the Jets?
Well, I think that rumor is really it's a part B of a rumor. I think Daniel Jeremiah and Joe Douglas, the Eagles vice president of player personnel, who's rumored for the job, I think he and Joe are very close friends. And I think that and if Joe gets the job, I think he wants to bring Daniel Jeremiah with him in that role. Now, Daniel, I think, is an excellent personnel guy. I think he's worked extremely hard. I think he does a great job on television. There is a difference between being in charge of an organization and being on television. There's a huge difference. People talk about this all the time. Managers do the right thing. Managers do things right. Leaders do the right thing. And when you get a job, you have to do the right thing. And I think that's the challenge. I think Mike Mayock's going to find it. I think everyone, as you change, it becomes more difficult.
We're getting the Raiders next year here in Vegas. So what do you think of the job the other TV guy, Mike Mayock, has done so far with John Gruden?
Well, I think they've been all over the map. I think they've been just like John. John loves to change the team. He moves a lot of different pieces around. I think it's going to be fascinating how this all comes together. They talk about wanting to build a culture-based team, and they trade for Antonio Brown, and they bring in players that I think a little bit that stretch that character, stretch that culture. I think it's going to be fascinating. I think picking Farrell, the fourth pick overall in the draft, was really a reach. Now, I know they said they got the guy they wanted, but the draft isn't like collecting baseball cards. The draft is about understanding value and how you utilize that value. They could have gotten Farrell very easily by trading up from 24, and they could have picked Devin White, the linebacker from LSU, and they would have ended up with two players and helped their defense tremendously. So I think it's going to be an on-the-job training experience for Mike.
So why do I hear so many people buck that theory? Gettleman, you know, talking about Daniel Jones and Charlie Casserly having his back. Why do we hear other people are like, no, you go get the person you want? And well, I mean, I counter all the time, and so does my partner Adam. Like, the draft is a game. You have to understand how to play the game. It's not simply just grabbing the guy you want 15 spots before he's probably going to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, you got it. I mean, look, this whole notion that you can't fall in love, you can't make emotional decisions in any decision making. You can't do that. It's against every – you ask anybody who makes decisions, and they'll tell you you must keep your emotions out of decision-making. And so when you become into this mode, I got to have that player, you're going to have a bad draft. You are going to have a bad draft, because the reason is because what we never talk about on television is there's two draft boards. There's the vertical board of the positions that are ranked, all the quarterbacks, 1 through 15. And then there's the horizontal board, how that quarterback compares to another position. And if the two players are ranked in the same area, who do you pick? Daniel Jones is not the sixth best player in the draft. That is a fact. There's no way he's the sixth best player in the draft. So what you've done by selecting him at six is you've ignored your horizontal board. And when you do that, you become very problematic in terms of team building.
Well, we know the Patriots have done it extremely well, and you certainly know that over the years. What other teams play the draft game well?
I think, look, the Colts are doing a really good job with it. I think they understand it. I think they got it. I think the Eagles get the value board. I think they understand how it works. I think Pittsburgh has always done a good job of understanding where the draft is. I think Pittsburgh gets the fact that the draft is never about, this is what people don't understand, it's never about your next year's team. It's always about your team 2 years away. So this draft, the 2019 draft, was about the 2020 team, not the 2019 team. Now, there'll be some that impact the team, but not all. And you have to build your team based on knowing that those players must be developed, they must grow, and they must adhere into your system. Walsh used to say all the time, the first year will teach them the system, the second year will develop their skills within the system. That's the essence of the draft. And when you start to sit there and think, I need this player to have a good team in this year, you're way off base.
I refuse to click on this link, but you tweeted out something earlier, and it's going to make us infuriated out here. Tom Brady is not playing until he's in his 50s, is he?
Did you see him running on that treadmill?
No, I'm not watching it.
Well, you've got to watch it. I mean, it's remarkable. Look, I will be the first to tell you, when I went to the Patriots in 2014, they were coming off one of their worst seasons offensively, 2013. LeGarrette Blount carried that team to the conference championship game. And when I got to New England that year, I said to Belichick, I think this is one of your finest coaching jobs, because this team had no business getting to the conference championship game. And when I got there, we were all concerned about the passing game. Could Brady still go? We drafted Jimmy Garoppolo because we felt like, how much longer do we think that Tom can actually keep going? And that was going to be the question. And not only did he prove me wrong, he's proved me wrong by a lot of years. I mean, he's been just flat-out remarkable. And I don't know how he does it. I don't know if it's the avocado ice cream. I'm never going to try it, so it's not going to affect me. But the reality of it is, he's remarkable.
Am I wrong for thinking with the Patriots that Bill Belichick calling the defensive plays, is that a good thing? I mean, aren't his responsibilities going to be stretched too thin?
You could never stretch him too thin, seriously. I mean, the man's remarkable, right? So he's always on top of everything. There's not one offensive play that's being run that he doesn't know. There's not one defensive play that's being run that he doesn't know. There's not one special teams play that he doesn't know. In fact, if the L4 on the kickoff team got injured and the backup L4 went in there, he would know what the L4 did. He knows everything about the game. Him being able to run the defense is probably easier for them when he doesn't run it, because he doesn't have to kind of interject what he wants to do. The game management flows through the defense, plus the defense will gain his personality. I think it's the only play he has, and he'll be able to handle it because he can do such a good job of being able to communicate what your job is. All those coaches will work for him, and they'll understand exactly what they have to do each and every week.
That's Michael Lombardi here on Cofield & Company. Let's wrap on this. You're going to be in town early June. You've got a speaking engagement or engagements around UNLV. What are you going to talk about? What do you speak to these audiences about?
Well, I mean, I'm really excited to go back to UNLV. I started my career there. It's one of the places that I was fortunate enough to drive my truck from a little beach town in Ocean City, New Jersey, and I got to work for Harvey High, and I got to learn football there. So I'm excited to come back to UNLV. I'm going to talk to the administration of the athletic department, talk to everybody, the athletic director, everybody, to talk about really what culture means, what it is to be a successful franchise. And the beautiful thing about football is it applies to every business. And that's what I don't think people truly understand. How we all work together. The name on the front of the jersey is way more important than the name on the back. And I'm going to talk about all the principles that I've learned through working for some of the greatest culture builders of all time, from Bill Walsh to Bill Belichick. And I'm going to share those experiences like I wrote about in Gridiron Genius.
Yeah, Adam, my partner, can tell you, come August when Hard Knocks is on, I turn into a freaking lunatic because I watch these coaches and the way they run a football team, and I'm like, my God, can we just run the radio station this way? But a lot of times you can try, but there's some teams,
the radio station probably runs better than some teams, I can promise you that. And that one thing about Hard Knocks, I will tell you this, Hard Knocks will get you fired. If you can't sell yourself to the American public that you know what you're doing, you're going to get your butt fired.
Yeah, that was not a good look for Joe Philbin. I don't know that Mike Smith came off super well. And I will tell you this, though, that Rex Ryan could run this place because we are all into those goddamn snacks.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of solitaire time. There you go.
Michael, we appreciate it. Anything else you want to push aside from what you're doing with the podcast?
No, I wrote a column about this Jet thing for The Athletic. If you go, I think The Athletic's a great site. It's unbelievable in terms of the coverage and the content. So I wrote a column. All the things I talked about today, I wrote on the New York Jets. Your New York Jets.
Just rub it in. A good way to close the interviews. Thank you so much.
Well, my son worked for him, so it was the hardest thing in my life, I got to tell you. Yeah. To have to fly the jet flag at our summer home but he worked for him, and we did. It was painful. People walked by the house and shook their head. They couldn't believe I was doing it, but I did.
Michael, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.